There's a parenting philosophy taking over TikTok and Instagram, and everyone has an opinion about it. Gentle parenting. If you've spent more than 10 minutes on parenting social media, you've seen the pastel-colored reels, the perfectly scripted responses to toddler meltdowns, the parents crouching down to eye level and saying, "I hear that you're feeling frustrated right now." And depending on who you are, you either think, "Finally someone gets it," or you want to throw your phone across the room.
I'll be honest, Emma. Sometimes I'm in the second camp. Not because I think the core idea is wrong, I really don't, but because what gets called gentle parenting online has become something almost unrecognizable from what the research actually supports. And I think that gap is causing real problems.
And I think you're partly right, but I also think there's a risk of overcorrecting the overcorrection. So today we're going to get into it. What gentle parenting actually is, not the Instagram version, what the science says, where it genuinely breaks down, and what actually works. Welcome to Claude Talks. I'm Emma.
And I'm Ryan. Let's start with the basics, because I genuinely think most people arguing about gentle parenting on the internet are not arguing about the same thing.
Right. So where does it come from? Gentle parenting as a term is most associated with Sarah Aquel-Smith, a British parenting author. But the underlying framework draws on decades of developmental psychology. The Rael Foundation is attachment theory, John Bowlby in the 1950s, Mary Ainsworth's famous strange situation studies in the 60s and 70s. The core finding: children who have a secure attachment to their caregivers, meaning they feel safe, seen, and soothed, develop better in basically every measurable way.
And then you have more modern work building on that. Dan Siegel's whole brain child approach, the idea that a young child's brain is literally not yet capable of reasoning under emotional stress, so trying to discipline a dysregulated child with logic is like trying to have a rational conversation with someone in the middle of a panic attack. It doesn't work. Not because they're being difficult, because their prefrontal cortex, the part that handles reason and impulse control, is offline.
And Janet Lansbury, who's hugely influential in this space, her approach is about respecting children as whole people while still holding boundaries calmly and consistently. None of these people are saying let kids do whatever they want. That's the thing. The four pillars of genuine gentle parenting are empathy, respect, understanding child development, and crucially, boundaries.
Boundaries. That word gets dropped entirely in the Instagram version.
It does. And I think that's the key distinction that gets lost. Gentle parenting is not empathy instead of boundaries. It's empathy and boundaries together. It's not saying yes to everything. It's not never having consequences. It's not letting your four-year-old run the household, because you don't want them to feel the discomfort of being told no.
Which, to be fair, is what a lot of people see when they look at gentle parenting content online. And their skepticism is not irrational. Because there is a version of this that has become essentially consequence-free parenting dressed up in developmental language.
Let's talk about the actual research, because this is where it gets interesting. The most robust framework in parenting research is Diana Bomren's parenting styles model: authoritative, authoritarian, and permissive. And this research has been replicated across cultures, income levels, different family structures. The findings are consistent.
Authoritative parenting, warm and firm, high responsiveness, high expectations, clear limits, produces the best outcomes. Better academic performance, better mental health, better social skills, better self-regulation. Across the board.
Authoritarian parenting, strict, low warmth, high control, because I said so, produces compliance. Kids do what they're told. But the outcomes in Western contexts especially: lower self-esteem, higher anxiety, worse peer relationships, less intrinsic motivation. They follow rules when someone's watching and fall apart when no one is.
And permissive parenting, warm and responsive but low on structure, avoiding saying no, not enforcing limits, produces kids with poor self-regulation, higher anxiety, difficulty with frustration, trouble with boundaries later in life. Ironically, the approach that's supposed to protect kids from distress often produces more of it.
And here's the thing, Ryan, genuine gentle parenting is authoritative parenting. It's the same thing. Warm and firm. Empathy and structure. The research absolutely supports it.
I agree with that. 100%. The problem is that what gets practiced and promoted under the gentle parenting label often lands closer to permissive than authoritative. And the outcomes of permissive parenting are not ambiguous. This isn't a values debate. The data is pretty clear.
So why did we end up here? I think a lot of it is generational reaction. A huge number of millennial parents, and I include myself in this, were raised in households that leaned authoritarian. You do it because I'm the parent and I said so. No explanation. Feelings weren't discussed. They were dismissed or punished. And that leaves marks. And when you become a parent yourself, you don't want to do that to your kids.
Which is completely understandable. But the problem with reacting against your childhood is that you can overcorrect. The pendulum swings from feelings don't matter all the way to feelings are everything, my child must never experience discomfort. And that's not healthy either.
The rise of big feelings culture is a good example of this. Validating a child's emotions, genuine, important, we're not walking that back. Research strongly supports emotional validation as foundational for emotional intelligence. But validation is the beginning of the interaction, not the end of it.
Right. I can see you're really angry that you can't have another biscuit. That makes sense. Full stop. And then, nothing? The biscuit still doesn't appear, but also there's no redirection, no closure, just open-ended emotional processing with a three-year-old who just wants the biscuit.
To be fair, the full version of the approach does include what comes after you validate and then you redirect the behavior. You're angry, and we still don't hit. I hear that you're upset, and it's still time to leave the park. The feeling is real and acknowledged. The behavior still has a limit. It's an and, not a but.
And I love that framework in theory. You're angry, and we don't do that. Not you're angry, but stop it. The and acknowledges reality without dismissing it. But in practice, the part after the and gets soft. You're angry, and we don't do that, sweetheart, and I just want you to know that your feelings are valid and I understand that it's really hard and 20 minutes later you're still explaining the same thing while the kid has completely moved on and is now hitting the dog.
Okay, that's a very specific mental image.
I'm speaking from experience. Not mine. Definitely not mine.
But it's real. The over-explanation problem is real. Kids, especially young ones, do not need a dissertation. They need a clear, calm, consistent signal. We don't do that. Said once. Followed up with action, not more words. Janet Lansbury talks about this explicitly. The long emotional negotiations don't serve the child. They can actually increase anxiety because the child is trying to process too much at once.
Right. And there's also something in there about who's actually being soothed in those 20-minute conversations. Is it the child? Or is it the parent, reassuring themselves that they've been emotionally thorough enough, that they won't damage their kid, that they're the good parent?
That's a provocative read.
Maybe. But I think there's something to it. The performative version of gentle parenting, the Instagram scripts, they often seem more designed to make the parent feel emotionally sophisticated than to actually work with the child. And real parenting at 7 in the morning, when you've had 5 hours of sleep and you're already late, looks nothing like those reels.
Let's talk about where the approach actually breaks down because I do think there are legitimate limits. The most obvious one, safety. If your toddler is about to run into the road, you don't say, "I can see you're curious about that car." You grab them and you say stop. Loudly, firmly, immediately. And that's fine. That's appropriate. The approach has never said otherwise.
Right, but some parents have internalized the never raise your voice part so completely that they hesitate in genuinely urgent moments. I've seen it. The voice stays gentle when it shouldn't. And that hesitation can be dangerous.
The research does support that consistent, clear, firm language, not screaming but authoritative, is appropriate and necessary in certain contexts. Volume and urgency are legitimate parenting tools. They're just overused in authoritarian models, so the reaction against them sometimes swings too far.
The second breakdown point is temperament. Gentle parenting, as it's typically described, seems to assume a fairly typical, moderately sensitive child. But kids have wildly different temperaments. There are highly spirited kids, high energy, intense, persistent, easily overwhelmed, who actually need more structure, not less. More predictability. Firmer limits. Because the structure is what makes them feel safe.
Jerome Kagan's work on temperament is really relevant here. And it goes the other way too. Highly sensitive children can be genuinely overwhelmed by even calm confrontations. One size does not fit all. And the Instagram version definitely presents one approach as universally applicable.
Third breakdown, parental resources. Gentle parenting requires emotional bandwidth that depleted adults just don't always have. It asks you to co-regulate your child's nervous system, to be the calm, grounded presence, when your own nervous system is running on empty. Single parents, parents with stressful jobs, parents dealing with their own mental health challenges. The approach can feel like one more way to fail when you don't have the resources it demands.
Which is why I think the repair piece is so important. And actually, this is one of the most evidence-based parts of the whole approach. Losing your temper with your child doesn't undo good parenting. What matters enormously is repair. Going back to your child after a rupture, when everyone's calm and saying, "I got really frustrated earlier and I raised my voice. That wasn't fair to you. I'm sorry." That models emotional regulation better than never losing your temper would. It shows them. People make mistakes and we come back and repair them.
I genuinely think repair is the most underrated concept in all of parenting. And it requires you to step down from the parental authority pedestal and be human in front of your kid, which can feel threatening if you grew up with authoritarian parents who never apologized. But the research on rupture and repair in relationships, not just parenting, in all relationships, is really compelling.
Okay, so what actually works? Because I don't want to leave people with just a list of what's wrong with Instagram parenting. Let's be concrete.
Validate the feeling, redirect the behavior. You're angry, and we don't hit. Full stop. Not 20 sentences. The feeling is real, the limit is real.
Natural consequences over punishment where possible. You didn't wear your coat, you got cold. You didn't do your homework, you had an uncomfortable conversation with your teacher. The consequence comes from reality, not from the parent, which makes it much harder to fight against. No one to be angry at except the situation.
And you resist the urge to rescue. You saw the coat on the chair. You said once. You let it play out. That's hard for a lot of parents.
Connection before correction. A dysregulated child, flooded with emotion, in fight or flight mode, literally cannot take in new information or change behavior in the moment. Their brain won't let them. So trying to lecture or explain while they're crying or raging is wasted breath. You get calm first. They get calm. Then you address what happened.
Which means sometimes the right move is to say nothing in the moment. Sit with them. Hand on the back. Wait. And deal with the behavior when the storm passes. That's not avoiding the issue. That's working with how the brain actually functions.
And then there's consistency, not perfection. One bad day, one explosion, one time you got it completely wrong does not define your child's trajectory. Parenting outcomes are about patterns over time. The research is actually quite reassuring on this. It's the general environment, generally warm, generally consistent, generally having consequences, that matters.
Not whether you nailed every single interaction with a perfectly calibrated emotional response. Because nobody does that. And pretending that you do, or that you should, is its own kind of damage.
So here's where I think we end up, and I know we don't entirely agree on this. Gentle parenting, properly understood, is well supported by research. It's essentially the same thing as authoritative parenting, warm, firm, developmentally informed. The problem is that the term has been colonized by a content creator version that strips out the firm, keeps the warm, adds a lot of aesthetically pleasing scripts, and calls it enlightened parenting.
And parents who try the Instagram version and find that it doesn't work, because it won't, it's not designed to work, it's designed to look good, walk away thinking gentle parenting doesn't work. When what actually didn't work was a distorted version of it.
But I want to push back slightly on the framing. Even if some people slide into permissiveness, I don't think the answer is to overcorrect back toward more authority. I think the answer is better information about what the approach actually says.
I don't disagree with that. My frustration isn't with the underlying framework. It's with the cultural performance of it. The way it's become a marker of a certain kind of parenting identity rather than a set of tools that you apply thoughtfully based on your kid, your family, your situation.
And here's the thing that actually keeps me up at night, a little. The research on authoritative parenting is really strong. But most of it comes from Western, educated, middle-class samples. When you look at cross-cultural data, East Asian families, African-American families, the relationship between parenting style and outcomes is more complicated. High-control parenting doesn't produce the same negative outcomes in all cultural contexts, which means there's cultural humility needed here too.
That's fair. And it's another reason to be suspicious of any parenting approach that presents itself as the universal answer. Context matters. Culture matters. The child in front of you matters.
So where does that leave us?
Honestly? A bit unresolved, which I think is the honest answer. I think the framework is good. I think the execution, at least as mediated through social media, often isn't. I think a lot of kids would benefit from more warmth and less punishment. I also think a lot of kids whose parents have drunk deeply from the Instagram version would benefit from a clear, calm, non-negotiable no delivered without 10 minutes of emotional processing.
And I think the parents who are most earnestly trying to do right by their kids, who are reading all the books, watching all the reels, scripting their responses, are sometimes the most anxious because every interaction becomes a test of whether they're good enough. And that anxiety is transmitted to the kids.
Parental anxiety is one of the most robust predictors of child anxiety in the research. So there's a real irony, trying so hard to be the perfectly attuned parent, to never get it wrong, can itself be part of what goes wrong.
Which is maybe the most gentle parenting conclusion of all. Give yourself the same compassion you're trying to give your kid.
See, that almost sounds like a clean ending.
Almost. Because I still think you're too hard on the Instagram parents.
And I still think you're underestimating how many four-year-olds are currently running their households.
Laughs, that's probably where we leave it. Thanks for listening to Claude Talks. If you want to dig into the research, Dan Siegel's The Whole Brain Child is a good start, and Ross Green's The Explosive Child is excellent for the temperament angle. We'll see you next time.
Take care of yourselves. And your kids. And put a coat on them.